If we could please complete the putting away of our talitot and tefillin with minimal disturbance, as this will be Rabbi Tarragon's final presentation to us before he and Hillel Mann make their way to leave our community. I just want to thank you, Rabbi Tarragon, from Rav Tarragon's very first presentation on Thursday afternoon right through until this evening. He has guided our entire weekend. He's taken us back in time to numerous different stages of history, and he has brought Tisha B'Av very much into our lives and made it exceptionally relevant to our day as well. Rabbi Tarragon, thank you so much for coming to visit us once again. We look forward to your future visits as well and for your concluding words now.
Okay, so I have to confess that life's about conflicts, and I find myself facing one at this moment. If a person truly mourns Yerushalayim, they don't flee from Tel Aviv, nor do they truncate the experience. So we still have 10 minutes of Avelos, and we're not running anywhere. And if we're true to our hearts and to our sentiments, we don't terminate Tisha B'Av until it absolutely leaves us. On the other hand, I'd like to be effusive in my thanks to Rabbi Mervis, and how much I hold him in high regard, and how hard and exceptionally talented he works, and everything he delivers and contributes to this community. And I would love to be effusive in my praise for Robert and Ruth for hosting me. And I just love to be effusive in how much of a special place I have in my heart for this community, and how warmly I'm greeted, and how much I enjoy being embraced and spending time together. Someone great once said, "The flower of the mind loses half of its petals on the tongue." So please accept the flower of my mind without the petals of my tongue. And you know what my sentiments are. And hopefully we'll have opportunity to spend time together under different circumstances where the framework of the day allows more effusion and more warmth. As the day concludes, and we have, as Rabbi Mervis mentioned, tried to wrestle with anti-Semitism and wrestle with the odyssey of Jewish history and wrestle with everything we've been exposed to, let's scale it back. Where does this all come from? Why are we so hated? What is our mission in this world? Har Sinai, the mountain upon which it was all delivered and which Jewish history was launched, Har Sinai has many names to it: Chorev, Har HaElokim. Many names, but the most popular name, the name that catches, that sticks, is the name Sinai. Chazal asks, source number one, "My Har Sinai," line three, "Hare Sheyarda Sina Leumos Haolam Alav." It is called Sinai because phonetically the word Sinai evokes the word Sina, hatred, animosity, contempt. The reason that we are contempted in this world is because we stand for Hashem. And we began to stand for Hashem at Har Sinai. And that moment was the birth of anti-Semitism. We are placed in this world to represent Hashem and to educate this world towards two crucial messages. One is morality, one is monotheism. That man is meant to be kind and compassionate, to construct ethical societies, to show pity and mercy, because that is the face of God. Because God is not angry and God is not vengeful and God is not hateful and God is not full of ire. Because we want to craft the world in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. and we have shaped this world morally. Through thousands of years of victimhood, we have authored a moral world. We've also convinced the world that despite the diversity of this world, the teeming masses and the differentiation, and not just the diversity, but the dichotomy of this world, light and dark and good and evil, it all comes from one being. It's all created. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. It took the world centuries to wrap its collective imagination around that idea. But slowly but surely, we have convinced this world that many come from one. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We've challenged the world to higher ground, and no one likes a whistleblower. And we are contented because we challenge the world's morality. We challenge the world's theological. It's easier to be a paganist. Idols are Maaseh de Adam, the human crafted and the human manipulated. You want your pagan god to serve you, you sacrifice a virgin, you bribe the god, you caress the god's ego. Monotheism is hierarchical. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in heaven, we are on this earth, and we submit to his will. It is a difficult religion. We have challenged the world out of easy religion towards difficult, transcendent religion. And we believe in metaphysical forces that can't be traced. If you interview your average anti-Semite and ask him why he dislikes a Jew, he won't quote the Gemara in Shabbos that just quoted. But there are larger metaphysical forces that govern human behavior that can't be traced through empiricism and can't be detected by statistics. Jews believe in multiple spheres. Our sphere, our world, as well as a metaphysical world that governs and dictates human behavior. And the source of anti-Semitism is Har Sinai. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered this great challenge to Avram Avinu, source number two, Vayomer li Avram yodah teda ki ger yiazaracha bi'eretz lo lahem va'avadum vino osam. He wasn't just referring to a one-off incident in Egypt where we would be despised, but we would wander this earth as a foreigner, standing on one side of the river, challenging the world, and defeating their preconceptions, and shifting their paradigms, and moving them to higher ground, and introducing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world. And for that, we will be a ger. And for that, va'avadum. And for that, v'inu osam. And not just Avraham Hoshana, but that is a template for Jewish history. In Genesis and Bereishis, we're compared to the dirt of the earth because sometimes we're trampled upon. We're also compared to the stars because we're celestial. But in addition to the earth, in addition to the stars, we're compared to the sand. Why are the Jews compared to the sand? Why is sand different from dirt? Why is Chol Hayam different than Afar Haaretz? Because this world used to be covered with water. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to create space for human experience, had to collect the waters into oceans, Yikavu Amayim, and create a differentiation between dry land, the human sphere, and the void, the chaos of water that can't be governed by human faculty. HaKadosh Baruch Hu carved out, but yet the water still wants to regain its territory. And it always wants to crash upon dry land and recover its original territory. And the sand serves as a fortress against the crushing power of the waves, looking to recede back to their original domination of this entire planet. So the sand is the fortress against the encroaching efforts of the sea. Sand is a fortress. When you're standing on a beach, you're watching a Genesis drama unfold. The attempt of the ocean to reverse HaKadosh Baruch Hu's activity, and the sand preventing that ocean from covering our earth. Well, you're not just witnessing a geological drama, you're also witnessing a moral drama. Because the water stands for void and evil and forces of evil. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu carved out a space for human productivity and human welfare and human progress. But there are forces of evil. Tohu vavohu. Ruach Elokim, rachavetz apnei ha'mayim. Want to engulf humanity. Want to challenge humanity. Want to contaminate humanity. And those waters are always at bay, about to encroach upon human progress, if not for the sand. And we are the sand. We are the fortress of humanity against evil. We stand tall against tyrants. We stand tall against Nebuchadnezzar. We depose Nebuchadnezzar. We stand tall against the Soviet Union. We stand tall against terror. We stand tall against moral barbarism. We stand tall against paganism. We are the sand because we are the fortress of humanity, preventing evil, chaos, confusion, savagery from overcoming our earth. And for that we pay a price, just as the sand pays its price. And because anti-Semitism is not just some anecdotal, episodic, serendipitous event because of some way that a Jew behaved, there are four conclusions in 4 minutes. Don't worry, I have an alarm on my watch. We're ending at 5:59. Don't worry. Number one, don't allow the narrative of anti-Semitism to be conflated with any other narrative. When Jews were murdered in Pittsburgh, that was not part of a general narrative of the weak and the vulnerable being discriminated against. We as Jews were social crusaders. We crusade and we protect the rights of the weak and the vulnerable. Whether they be people of color, people of race, people of sexual orientation, it is our responsibility to protect their rights and prevent their abuse. But anti-Semitism is different. And don't allow the persecution of a Jew to be conflated. In Pittsburgh, it all became one narrative. Let's stand by the Jews because we stand by people of color, we stand by immigrants, and we stand by homosexuals, and these are people we stand by. But the persecution of a Jew is ahistorical. It isn't sociological, it isn't religious, it isn't grounded in a particular ethos or culture. There's a separate narrative that's woven into the fabric of religious history. The challenge of humanity incites hostility. It is a separate narrative. Number two, anti-Semitism will end when history ends, not before. We make every possible effort to curb it, and thank God we have, and compare 2019 to 1939, 80 years ago. And thank God we have reined it in, and we have marshaled the forces of democracy and the kindness of an enlightened generation to try to limit anti-Semitism, to protect Jews against anti-Semitism. But don't fall into the delusion that if we could just explain ourselves and just create enough watchdog organizations and enough anti-defamation leagues and just educate the world, anti-Semitism is woven into the DNA of human history. And it will end when history ends, not before. That should not render us fatalistic. God forbid, as I said before, we must take every possible practical measure, both in the anti-Semitic sphere as well as in the diplomatic sphere of BDS, to try to explain our position and justify ourselves and acquit our record. But anti-Semitism and anti-Israel hostility will end when history ends. Number three, don't fall into misanthropy. They're not our enemies. There are future audiences. Our function, our challenge in this world is to inspire the world. And one day, all of the naysayers and all of the mockers and all of the hostile opponents will one day gather in Yerushalayim and thank us. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your resilience. Thank you for loving us when we hated you. Thank you for believing in us when we defamed you. Thank you for advancing the arc of humanity and returning the world to a utopian state for all of our betterment. Now we have no interest in converting anyone on this planet to Jews. We have every interest in advancing the world to a utopian state where universal welfare will be enjoyed by every single human being on their terms. Haroninu goyim amo ki dama vadav yikom. One day they'll stand on Tisha B'Av and they'll apologize profusely and they'll also thank us generously for our efforts and for our patience and for our forbearance. Those are the three conclusions. I don't have time because it's a minute away from Maariv. Those are the three conclusions of anti-Semitism. Don't allow the narrative to be conflated. Don't expect practical solutions to be comprehensive solutions. Just because we can't reach comprehensive solutions doesn't mean that we shouldn't curb or mitigate the impact of anti-Semitism. And thank God our generation has performed wonderfully in that regard. And finally, do not allow it to render you a misanthrope. Do not allow it to become toxic. Do not allow it to infect you with a hatred towards the others. We are kind people, and we're meant to inspire the world. One day we will, and we'll stand in Yerushalayim on the 9th of Av, triumphantly having brought and delivered welfare to humanity after so many years of struggle.